My next guest is a senior executive leader and founding partner at Level 5 Associates LLC. Please welcome Robert Mixon. Robert, thanks for being on the show today.
Hey, thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
Why don't you tell one a little bit about yourself? What's important for us to know about you and what you're passionate about with work?
Well, I've been privileged throughout my journey to have been a soldier for 33 years, was promoted to to senior ranks, probably beyond my capabilities at some points in time. But anyway, I was fortunate to be a general officer and then retired about 13 years ago, went into a manufacturing company and then another organization in a manufacturing role, but a larger scale as a nonprofit. And then my dream was to have my own company and help other leaders, organizations grow based on what I had learned. Through a lot of mistakes is what I learned about life and leadership.
Well, we always like having some senior leaders from the military on the show. We've had some pretty good notable people, and there's always this kind of great lessons. And I think people get a really bad understanding of how military leadership works and chain of command works, and how I was even surprised when we were doing research for my book. We said, who's the best at training people remotely? And the answer we kept getting back was the United States Marine Corps, that they were excellent at training people, you know, away from something really big they were going to have to later do, come together and execute and do something that they were really good at. It wasn't a company, it wasn't Google, it wasn't any, it was a Marine Corps. So, you know, what's sort of your leadership journey been like, you know, since you were, I guess, sort of entered into West Point back in 1970?
Right. Yeah, I entered West Point first July 1970. A 17-year-old high school graduate, two weeks out of high school, and went from growing up in Georgia, North Carolina, to what they call the parade field at West Point, with 1,399 other young men from around the world. In those days, it was all male. Entered what was going to be a crucible for me. I certainly knew it was a strange place, and people were, you know, acting, I guess you would say, pretty directly in helping me and my classmates become soldiers or understand the culture of soldiering. It was a tough road to hoe. And it was tough because of the environment there, but also because of the environment in our nation. You know, we were a nation in crisis in the late 60s and early 70s. We're a nation in crisis now, but it's not the first time. And, you know, the Vietnam War had divided them. Pretty severely. So I was on a path to being a soldier, and yet in a generation where the military had largely been blamed for much of the policy in Vietnam, it was incorrect. That's what happened. And as a result, I think what it did was, in my class at West Point, we grew closer together. We became much more of a band of brothers, to quote the term, than we might have otherwise. And then my journey through the military was one of ups and downs and highs and lows, like most of us in life, where I learned to be a leader, a caring leader, by being around other caring leaders. And the military has somewhat of a, I think, label as being very directive, and sometimes we have to be. But it was also inclusive in many ways, inclusive of people and increasingly so on point for the nation in terms of social change in many ways. So once I came into the Army and was around men and women that I admired and respected, I wanted to stay around those men and women because I felt as though I belonged. And so that kept me in the Army along the way. And my family supported me in the effort, highs and lows. And I was privileged to serve in the capacity, like I said, for 33 years in leadership capacities, where I was responsible for a whole lot of the people. And I took it very seriously.
So I imagine along the way, you probably met some really key people that impacted you. And I'm sure being in the service for as long as you are, that you were continued to be a student of leadership. I mean, it would be completely out of character of any of the people I've met who it seems like they are students in that way. So are there some particular heroes that maybe you could identify for us and why you feel that way?
Yeah, I'll talk about two. One military and one not. My military hero I'll talk about briefly is General Colin Powell, who is on his pictures on the wall behind me there, my boss. And I was privileged to be on his personal staff when he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And as Jim Maxwell talks about, or John C. Maxwell talks about in Level 5 Leadership, you know, General Colin Powell is a Level 5 leader. He represented, the term personhood that Maxwell uses. You know, people follow you because of who you are and what you represent. General Colin Powell was that person. His personhood was amazing. And we wanted to be with him and to do what he thought we should do. Give him the best advice, give him the best, because we wanted to. My other hero is my mom. Hi, Mom. She's almost 90 now and the matriarch of our family. She raised the six of us. I'm the oldest of six. In some pretty arduous conditions, not terribly arduous in, I guess you would say, financially or socially per se, but tough conditions, tough times. And she was always resilient and is to this day. She always gave us great advice, even though we chose not to pay attention to it. And she was there. So I think those two people represent heroes in my book because of who they are and what they represent.
Yeah, and usually I think you mentioned sort of really just two distinctly different types of leaders and two for different reasons, and yet just as impactful, I think. And usually those people can kind of give us a pretty big reflection on what's important in leadership and what we should be thinking about. I know you sort of have this big six leadership principles. Could you maybe kind of break those down for us so maybe we could better identify, who we should be considering to be our best leaders?
Yes, I developed the big six principles as a guide towards to leadership and the journey that we're all on. And I'll summarize them for you, Chris, briefly here. The first one is called set the azimuth. And I will tell you, 90% of the people I deal with don't know what an azimuth is. But I harvested it from the military because essentially it captures the idea of the cardinal direction of both yourself and your organization. We all need to set the azimuth of what's our mission, what's the intent, what's the vision in that mission, what are our beliefs, our values, and what's our culture, what are the behaviors that represent those. Those four components of setting the azimuth are the first of the big six principles that I seek to live by and help others learn to implement. I believe in practical tools. I'm not very esoteric. If we want to talk about the right brain, left brain, I'm not the right guy. I believe in tools, and setting the azimuth consists of specific tools, such as writing your personal mission statement. I think everyone, every leader should have a personal mission statement. Mine's right beside me here, and I look at it every day. Who am I? What do I do? Why do I do it? Just as every organization should have a mission statement. The second component of the big six is listen. As my hero, my mom, used to tell us many, many times, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. I didn't pay much attention to it, but over time, it dawned on me that listening is a leadership requirement. The best listeners, where they are on their stages of levels 1 through 5, as Max talks about, and level 5 leadership is the name of my company, so I believe in this journey. Listening is a skill, and it's you have to develop it and nurture it. Many of us don't really follow the Steve Covey guidance here either. Are you listening with the intent to understand, or are you listening with the intent to reply? 90% of us, I think, are listening with the intent to reply. And therefore, we are not really leaders who are seeking to listen as well as we could. And so there are some tools you can employ to become a more effective listener. And one of my favorites is the back break. It's the old adage about, I don't know what I told you to tell me what you heard kind of approach. I would probably still have tanks wandering around the forest in Germany, whether or not a fuel constraint, because I would give them some guidance that I thought was great. And I'd say, oh, you all got this. Yes, sir, we got it. And then they'd all move out and go somewhere else, different direction or opposite direction. It's very hard to stop a 64-ton tank when it's going the wrong direction. So listening is a skill you have to nurture and develop every day. The third principle is trust and empower. If we have to trust those that we serve as a leader, and we have to empower them to manifest that trust. It has to be deliberate. You can't simply say it, you have to do it. And there are ways you could do that, tools for your toolbox. The fourth principle is do the right thing when no one's looking. That sounds very easy, very easy. As we say in the Pentagon, that briefs well. Well, it's a whole lot harder than briefs. And walking that talk is where leadership really lives. The fifth principle is when in charge, take charge. That's not being loud. That's not being Patton-esque per se. Although he was a great leader in many ways at that point in time. Really, when in charge, take charge is being the calm in the chaos. It's being able to be a good bad news taker. To understand the first report is probably wrong. And to learn how to do that. And the sixth principle is balance the personal and professional. It's not about time. Work-life balance is not about time. It's about energy. And focusing your energy on what matters to you and nurturing the four batteries that we have inside us, the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, the mental, in ourselves and in others, so that we have that sense of balance in our lives.
You know, and those are things that you said them in for some of them in different ways. In some ways, I've heard them before. Doing the right thing when no one's looking is my definition of integrity, right? I mean, that's pretty sound. But I am sort of wondering, you mentioned previously about Colin Powell being a level five leader. So is there a difference in a level five leader into what you mentioned in those big six? Are they doing something more, something different? Or is it just that they're actually doing all six at the same time, right? So what makes a level five person?
A level five leader, as I mentioned earlier, has that quality of personhood. By employing the big six principles, you really implement your personhood and affect others. You know, leadership's about influence. It's about being the person that others want to be like. And the big six principles are really based on a foundation of humility. General Powell was a humble leader. He was the leader, but it wasn't about him. It was about us. And think about it, as you approach your leadership responsibilities, is it about us? It should be about us. One of the things I tell people to do is a tool for the toolbox. That's to take I and me out of your emails and texts. Hang them out. Only put it back in one exception and put it back in then when something's screwed up. Then I got this. When things are working well, we're kicking it. Proud of all of you. But when things are not going well, I got it. And that's where I think the big six principles nurture that sense of servant leadership.
Yeah, I mean, you can hear it in great leaders' words, right? When something good happens and they talk about their team, and they talk about the people that brought that together, even though everyone knows they were probably very instrumental in it being a success, right? They're celebrating those successes of the people that were there and doing the tough work. And this was very much a group thing, right? And yet, to your point, when things go bad, they stand up and say, I'll take the heat. I'll bear the brunt of this and I'll make it right. You know, both things are actually hard. it's hard not to want to stand up and say, I did it, you know, and this is, of course, I led this team. It was hard work. I mean, I made it happen. And, you know, and it's hard not to, you know, want to slink away when bad things happen and people want to get mad and point fingers. So, you know, these are things that I believe, you know, people have to practice. And maybe there's some innateness in there and maybe something they learn early on. But, you know, we do a lot to get our leaders to be part-time leaders to start, to give them practice leading in a smaller, safer, less compact, less scary way, right? So they can get it right and maybe screw it up a little bit and get some, you know, encouragement and some adjustment before, you know, we don't take them from graduating from West Point to you're now in charge of an entire brigade, right? Where there's got to be something in between there.
Yeah, in the Army, we say you crawl, then you walk, then you run. Mm-hmm. In leadership, I believe that's also true. You know, we have to nurture leaders and develop them. And soldiers, in many cases, join the Army and then become leaders at some point. They become sergeants, non-commissioned officers, or officers. And that's a big leap. That's a big leap from being one of the guys and gals to being right. The leader. And we have to help them understand what that represents and then reinforce it when they practice it, or help them understand when they don't and how they need, or we can correct it, you know, how we can adjust in this journey. It's not a linear progression either. There are fits and starts in the military career, in corporate career. There are going to be times when you tread water.
Yeah. And I don't think people can underestimate how hard it is to go from being one of the guys or gals or whatever, and to suddenly being in a leadership position, especially if you're being now a leader with those people that you know, that you have been in that setting with. Remember, I graduated high school. I had an injury. And so I didn't go and continue playing water polo. And they asked me to come back and be the assistant coach. And I go, ah, sure, that'll be fun. Did that, loved it. You know, it was not a big deal because I was the assistant. And then the coach quit and they said, now we'd like you to be the head coach of the swim team. And so I went in less than, you know, 9 months time. I went from being their person there was in, you know, practicing with, was their, you know, on a teammate with, to now I'm in charge of everyone. And it was like, it was a very strange thing, trying to have to figure out how do I exude authority and be a leader when, like, just a few months ago, I was goofing off with them and being, you know, just a teammate. And want to be successful and want to have a good outcome and want, you know, all those things. And I certainly have had friends in the military that have given those examples, right? They suddenly have gone from one to the other and it was so tough for them. They even have said that was the toughest thing, not the next three things that came after that that should have been tougher.
Yeah, it's just a very difficult transition. And young leaders or emerging leaders need a lot of help and support when they make that transition, you know, to being a person in charge. When in charge, take charge. You know, how do you take charge? Well, one of the key tools you have to implement or understand and implement in taking charge is being responsible. You know, the accountability that comes with responsibility. Now, the highest form of accountability is mutual accountability, but leadership accountability is certainly up there in the top two in terms of how you transition from being a member of a team to being the leader.
Yeah,
the responsibility and accountability have to be really upfront. You know, I help leaders develop that personal mission statement we talked about earlier, and then develop a personal leadership philosophy from that mission statement that really states who am I and what do I represent, and then give that to your team members to indicate to them, hey, this is now my role as a leader of this organization, and this is what you can expect from me, and this is what I expect from you.
Well, I know in your book, We're All In, The Journey to a World-Class Culture has been a big success. And it sounds like a lot of the things you talked about today, I'm sure, are in there that readers have really enjoyed it. But I understand you have a new book coming out or just came out. Who Saw This Coming? Now What to Do? Can you maybe talk about what people can expect in your new book?
Yes, it's an ebook, and you can access it on my website, www.level5associates.com. You spell out the five. Essentially, it's a description of how to apply the Big Six or some tools for application of the Big Six to adapt to the world we're in. We are in, you know, with historic times. We've said that, you know, thousands of times in the last 18 months. We truly are in historic times. And as leaders, we've got to adapt to the times that we're in. We can't hearken back to the times that we thought we once were or we wanted it to be way back in the day. It's not going to come back. We are a changed world now. And applying the Big Six is, perhaps, I think, in many ways more challenging than it's ever been because the hybrid world that we're leading, that we're members of, has some different demands on us. And so the book is about application of the Big Six in the world we're in and how to do it. You know, how do we apply those Big Six principles?
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like the principles are stay the same, but the environment keeps changing, right?
I think so, Chris. I don't think the Big Six have changed at all. I think the fundamentals of leadership, blocking, and tackling haven't changed.
Yeah.
It's how we apply those principles every day.
What do you think has kind of been the biggest change, whether it's in the world of the military, in the world of just leadership in general? I mean, as you mentioned, in 1970, it was men only, right? In West Point. And so that's a big change. There's been a lot of other cultural and significant changes in our country and our world. Where do you see the kind of the biggest change? I'll leave it to you, good or bad, that you kind of see that's maybe you wouldn't have ever even believed if someone would have told you that as you graduated West Point.
Well, I grew up in really what I call a culture of compliance, where we were highly educated in doing what we were told to do, doing it well. And that really is a directive type of culture where we comply with orders. cruising instructor. I think now we're in a culture of commitment where we lead through a greater sense of influence and buy-in, where we work towards a what I call a level five culture, just as there's five levels of leadership that Maxwell talks about. In my book, We're All In, I talk about five levels of culture because I was just thinking five is a cool number, but there are indeed levels of culture. And the We're All In culture is the culture of commitment, that we as leaders need to nurture and create that culture today and tomorrow and next week and next month. But it's not easy or simple. If it was, anyone could do it.
Really appreciate you being on the show today and sharing your lessons. I think sometimes we have people on here that have been a success, and maybe it's out of accident. I think you've been a success out of hard work and continuing to learn and to get better and to be influenced by important smart people. And I noticed that in a lot of the great people we have on this show, that they're not so brazen to say that they know it all. And I think it came through here today. So
thanks, Chris. I learned the big six by screwing them up.
There we go. Humility. That's always important. Well, yep. How can people, I know you kind of mentioned earlier, but maybe go ahead and give it to everyone again. How can people get a hold of you if they're interested in finding out more about you and working with you and your organization?
Yeah, my company is Level 5 Associates, and our website is www.level5associates.com. There you will find a snapshot of who we are and what we represent. It's basically me, and I have an assistant, a couple of folks help on occasion, but it's not a large entity, but we're very personalized. And we focus on, what are your goals? What do you want to achieve? And how can we do that together individually and as teams and as an organization?
Well, great. Thank you again so much for being on the show. We'd love to have you come back at some point and give us an update on everything you're doing.